On September 24th, an article entitled 24 Priests Quit in 5 Years appeared on the religion page of the Houston Chronicle. In part, the article read as follows. During the past 5 years, at least 24 Roman Catholic priests have left the priesthood in the Galveston-Houston diocese. There are about 200 priests in the diocese. National studies estimate that at least 30,000 priests of about 550,000 total worldwide have left the priesthood during the same period. By 1970, for every priest ordained in the United States, an average of 2.5 priests have left the ministry, compared with only a fraction less than one who quit for each priest ordained in 1965. U.S. seminary recruitment has plummeted 30% nationwide. Next Thursday in Rome, a worldwide synod of bishops convenes to study two topics, the priesthood and world justice. The priesthood question has attracted the most attention since every available indicator shows that the celibate Roman Catholic priesthood may be faced with extinction. Locally, there may be as many as 24 priests who have gone within the past 5 years, but the office of Bishop John L. Markovsky says it does not keep statistics and will release no information. A list obtained by the Chronicle indicates that most priests who left are now married. Others left because of disillusionment with the church. Many are still in the Houston area, although church law stipulates that any priest leaving must move at least 200 miles from his assignment as a priest. Nationwide studies reveal that most ex-priests go into some kind of social work or teaching, and this is borne out locally. This article was written by then-Chronicle religion editor Janice Law. The story immediately resulted in pressure being exerted upon Chronicle management to have Mrs. Law fired. The pressure apparently came from local leaders and members of the Catholic Church. Shortly thereafter, Chronicle city editor Zarco Franks confronted Mrs. Law and gave her the choice of resigning or being fired. Janice Law resigned her position as religion editor of the Chronicle and filed a formal complaint with the leadership of RNA, the Religion News Writers Association of America. The RNA newsletter reported the incident without naming the parties involved. The report read in part, quoting, RNA leadership is involved in a grave situation. Several weeks ago, a major newspaper dismissed its religion editor, an RNA member, after an office altercation. The fired religion editor is convinced the dismissal was the result of unfair charges involving complaints from members of a major denomination about unfavorable news treatment. Management of the paper accuses the writer involved of insubordination and other offenses. RNA officers have contacted the paper's management and received a long, contentious reply.
I suppose I heard first from Janice herself, where in communication with different members and committee members of our organization, and I believe she probably told me of it first.
Hiley Ward of the Detroit Free Press is president of RNA.
I, at the outset, tried to get all the input I could get, so I asked for Janice's side of it. We set up a committee there, and we got their input and their majority and minority report. To get things direct, I asked Mr. Pickles for his side of things, and he gave me a 7-page single-spaced letter. I asked for the Monsignor to reply, and he wrote a letter questioning what we were doing or something. I never did follow through with him. I don't know. I think possibly, and this is strictly a conjecture, that there are probably many factors in this, and the role of the Catholic Church could be one. Anytime the press buckles under the knuckles of a chancery or under the knuckles of a political organization, of course it puts in the jeopardy of the freedom of the press. We have very poor relations here, of course, with our Catholic press officer who keeps black books on the newspapers, who intimidates the press every time you call, and this is not just our paper, but other papers and so forth. But they don't succeed in the intimidation. Anytime a chancery or any kind of a public relations firm succeeds in intimidation of a newspaper, and if it can be shown as such, then I think the logical conclusion would be that there's not a free press in that particular area, if there is ever entirely a free press, but certainly it'd be a very poor concept of a free press, at least, where there's an intimidation.
You say you received something back, a letter back from Don Pickles of Chronicle. Yes, uh-huh.
Could you summarize what he had to say in response to the criticism of himself?
As I remember, it was an attempt by him to explain his side of it, which I'm sure is well taken. We had asked him at another point to join with us to name an arbitrator, and he declined later to do that. In his report, I carried on further dialogue with him, not so much on the personality aspect, which he seemed to think was the main factor and certainly might be a factor, but I was interested in his remarks about the role of a newspaper. And he seemed to be describing, at least the way I read it, that the role of a newspaper is largely a public relations effort. And so I decided to carry on some dialogue with him at this point, at which point the correspondence got a little tougher, and he decided he didn't want to correspond anymore after a certain point. But one of the key questions I had in it is just what is a newspaper? And there seemed to be an essential difference at this point. To him, it seemed to be a public relations thing, and to me, it seemed to be something else. Now, we have our problems with one church or another, but we don't have trouble with management at this point, as a rule. In his town, when a newspaper is challenged by a church, apparently they have some trouble. We don't have that trouble. We may have hard feelings. They may get threatened. I get letters asking people to cancel from my page, letters sent to the managing editor. My managing editor writes me a note and says, keep up the good work. Down in Houston, it seems to be if somebody criticizes the religion writer or somebody else, it is stepping on public relations toes, and therefore is an occasion for reviewing a person's efforts. This is the question I raised and tried to carry on some dialogue with some success, I think, with Mr. Pickles. But I did offer him and did suggest at one point that he and Janice perhaps would sit down with a third party of their own choosing and let that third party make some decision. And he wrote me back and said he was tired of the whole affair and he didn't want to do it. And I think this point ought to be brought out in fact by, just the one guy went in from the outside at our suggestion.
So he refused any kind of mediation and just wanted to more or less dismiss the whole thing.
He did. At my last correspondence with him, he said he was tired of it all. And it was disappointing to me because I had hoped that a party that in which Mr. Pickles would take part with would be a part of the final fact-finding. But since he declined, we had no other choice but to find our own man and to find one that was objective as we could find, and I understand that Mr. Rivers has a tremendous reputation in objectivity.
You chose William Rivers, who's a professor of communications at Stanford. Why particularly was Mr. Rivers chosen for this job?
We had talked with a number of people who would have the time and whom we could get down there, and Columbia Review finally sent somebody, but we thought we should have somebody of our own.
RNA President Ward commissioned Dr. William Rivers, head of the Communications Department at Stanford University, to carry out a formal investigation of the firing of Janice Law. Dr. Rivers arrived in Houston on December 15th and spent 2 days interviewing the principals in the case.
It is simply a matter of interest to me because I've written two books on the kinds of problems that go from the kind of situations that develop here. That is, one of them is responsibility in mass communication, which is on matters of ethics. And I have a belief that reporters, all journalists, including editors, are in a different position from those who work in other enterprises. That is, a reporter is an employee, of course, and so is a city editor, a copy editor, a managing editor, an employee of a firm. But he's in a different position from the employee of a shoe factory, the employee of General Motors, and so forth, in that what he does is tinged with the public interest. That is, it's entirely necessary for the public to understand what the central institutions of any society are like. And a reporter must try to get at the truth, and he must be protected. Now, I didn't know, of course, before looking into this case, before interviewing, before reading extensively, what the situation really was. I don't believe I was on anyone's side. I was simply interested as a consequence of my belief that it's necessary for a reporter to be protected.
Dr. Rivers' final report to the RNA began as follows, quoting, "As you requested, I have looked into the controversy surrounding the dismissal and forced resignation of Mrs. Janice Law by news executives of the Houston Chronicle. I visited Houston and interviewed the principals in this case, Mrs. Law, Chronicle managing editor Don Pickles, and Chronicle City Editor Zarco Franks. Mrs. Law told me that before Mr. Franks became city editor a few months ago, he upbraided her with such remarks as, "Why are you trying to get the church?" and "Why don't you leave the church alone?" Franks denies making such statements and maintains that he has no strong ties to the church. Mr. Franks says that he assigned Mrs. Law the story on priests leaving the church. Mrs. Law, however, says that this story, like many others she wrote, was self-assigned, and Mr. Franks' only role in it was to call to her attention a national story on laicized priests. I spoke with Chronicle City Editor Franks for his reaction to the Rivers report.
I would say that Professor Rivers reached a very erroneous conclusion. Church pressure had nothing to do with her dismissal. I found her to be incompetent. In my opinion, she was not a competent newswoman. If she'd been on fine arts, if she'd been a fine arts reporter, any other type of reporter, it strikes me, and I've gone over this so many times with so many people, and I catch myself at a loss at times to keep repeating myself. She just didn't know the language. She didn't know the English language well enough, she used her position as a religion editor to further her. It was sort of a little personal kingdom of hers, and it's almost like being a journalistic bully. And the closest parallel I can come to it is that a police officer who uses his gun and his badge for his personal gratification. This is similar to me. I don't think a newspaper man, a newspaper woman, should use the Chronicle or any other paper for their petty grievances and their own beliefs. I want a reporter to be decent, kind, objective, and of course always aggressive, but free of malice.
Well, you state that she was not a good writer, not a good command of the English language. However, William Rivers, in his report, says, I'll quote from his report, "Perhaps the fact that the New York Times and the National Catholic Reporter have been publishing Mrs. Law's stories, the former for months and the latter for years, marks her as highly competent. If the New York Times and the National Catholic Reporter have been publishing her stories, how can this be that then she is not a good writer?"
Let me answer the question this way. You would have to ask the New York Times and the National Catholic Reporter how much of her stuff was rewritten. Now, what appears in the newspaper under reporter's byline is not necessarily that reporter's work. Many a story appears in the Chronicle and all other papers where the original version of a story is given to a rewrite man or the desk man, and he takes it and he may do a complete dismantling job. From notes that she may have furnished the New York Times. What I'm trying to tell you is what you see in a newspaper under a certain reporter's byline doesn't necessarily reflect this as a reporter's work. He may have gotten the information, but someone else very possibly put the story together.
Well, then, it seems that the National Catholic Reporter, they would have ceased to use her material if they repeatedly, time after time, had to rewrite and reconstruct her stories. Wouldn't this, of course, I believe, is your feeling, that you would not want a reporter who constantly had to be rewritten, had to be reconstructed every time they put a story in. But however, for years she has been a contributor to this publication, so apparently they don't feel that her writing style is so offensive or so bad that they could not use it in this case for
You say for
years.
Years. You say for years. She became a religious editor about 2 years ago. She was on our paper as a religious editor, a writer, really, because all the stuff was edited and went through the desk. So the fact you call her a original editor, that's a title. But all her copy moved to the city desk. And in my experience in the newspaper business, going back over 25 years, and I worked in Louisville Times and the Galveston Daily News and this newspaper here, I've seen many stories, and I've done the rewrite jobs for the reporters who have furnished the raw material, and it appears under their name for the simple reason that they're called legmen in the business, and that's no reflection on the reporter. If his material, if he gets the material, that's the important part of the business, is to get the information. The writing is put together by a journeyman craftsman.
One thing I also wanted to ask you was the incident involving Mimi Crosley, who was asked to take over religious reporting after Mrs. Law's dismissal. And in her report, she says that you insisted that the Chronicle would no longer put up with controversial reporting of religion. Is that a true statement?
That's a very untrue statement. If you read the page one of the Chronicle today, we carry a story that the Bishop of San Antonio donated his ring to a raffle for the Ari Lano Silva Legal Defense Fund. Ms. Crosley was not told that, and I encourage all reporters, we want controversial subjects, because controversy, as you know, is the lifeblood of this business. I do not want I do not want bland reporting. I'm the last one in the world who would accept it, because I've been a controversial figure, and I've dug up many stories which are loaded with controversy. Miss Crosley simply did not want to write religion news. And at the time, my staff was short. I told her we needed her to fill in. She did not want to write it, and so she eventually quit. She was not dismissed. There was an unwholesome situation existed on this newspaper before I took over this job, between Mimi Crosley and Monsignor Gannon, the church, and other churches, I may say, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, were also... they didn't find her acceptable. So I try to heal this particular breach with Ganner. I invited him to lunch. That story was not discussed until late after we had lunch together. That particular story was discussed. That time it was in print already. He gave me a file that he had compiled, purporting to be inaccuracies and omissions in her reporting. He said it was slanted and there were mistakes made. I said, Monsignor, I could care less at this time about what had happened before. In the future, I said, I'm not going to curb any reporter for being aggressive. I want all the news, no matter whether it's favorable to the church or unfavorable. But if there's anything comes up which is inaccurate in our paper in the future, well, just call our desk. Call me. Let me know with any inaccuracies. That's the background for the off of the luncheon.
Okay, so in your final analysis, there was absolutely no pressure from the Catholic Church
whatsoever. If there'd been any pressure, as our managing editor told Mr. Rivers, Don Pickle, the managing editor, told him, we had received pressure from other denominations that she wasn't doing the job. They weren't satisfied with her. When I took over the job, she was here about a... I had been in charge of the city desk for about a month. And this is the background. It's all led to it. It was in the past. And I didn't want to have a situation on the staff where the reporter didn't have access to news. The reporter is no good to me. And apparently, I got the impression Gannon didn't trust her. And I'm sure several other denomination figures didn't trust her. So she lost the values of the newspaper. And then combined with the fact I didn't think she was a competent writer, made up my mind for me that I didn't want this woman on the staff.
You didn't want her on the staff
because of her
writing or because of the church figures?
No, not the church figures. She wasn't getting the information the way I wanted it.
That was Zarco Franks, city editor for the Houston Chronicle. In the conclusion of his report to the RNA, Dr. William Rivers states, quote, perhaps none of this proves that the Chronicle yielded to pressure. Perhaps it cannot be proved, but it seems significant that during Mrs. Law's tenure, Monsignor Gantner refused to allow another Chronicle reporter to cover his church's 75th anniversary celebration, citing as a contributing factor his displeasure with Mrs. Law's reporting. After she was dismissed, the Chronicle was allowed to cover the celebration.
Well, I think to the degree that a publication, or for that matter, a broadcasting, yields to the pressure of outsiders, that is, the news sources, certainly can infringe not just freedom of the press or freedom of expression, but infringe the right of the people of Houston, all those who read the Houston Chronicle, for example, to know what the truth is about the church. which is there. As you know, my report centered on her reporting of Catholic affairs, but there is plenty of evidence that other churchmen in other denominations were made unhappy as a consequence of what she wrote, because she is a probing reporter. One of the points of the report was that I believe that reporters should report all the central institutions of society, including the church, including business, including universities, like the one where I am employed, in a way that will enable the people to understand the influences of these organizations and how they perform, the church, education, businesses, and so forth. I believe that these should be reported in the way that the best political reporters report politics. And this calls for making people unhappy on occasion. Makes them unhappy with accurate reporting, so be it. It seems to me that it's necessary for news executives and for ownership executives of any publication or any broadcast operation to withstand the kinds of pressures that are visiting their front.
Could you give us a brief outline of what your findings were when you came to Houston and visited with Don Pickles and Zarco Franks and the people from the Chronicle and, of course, Mrs. Law? What did you find when you got to Houston?
My definite conclusion was that although there were probably other factors involved, pressure from churchmen was the determining factor in Mrs. Law's firing. It's difficult really to call it a firing, but she was offered the chance either to be fired or to resign, which seems to me to amount to the same thing. I then talked to Mr. Pickles, talked to Mr. Frank, Mrs. Law, talked to a number of persons, some of whom worked for the Chronicle and formerly worked for the Chronicle, some of whom asked to be anonymous, some of the news sources who provided information for the various stories Mrs. Law wrote, and reached my judgment as a consequence of this. I don't say that there aren't other factors. Mr. Pickles suggests, for example, that the prime reason for Mrs. Law's dismissal was a personality conflict with Mr. Franks. Mr. Franks himself says that it was a matter of Mrs. Law's professional competence. It seems to me that Mr. Franks refutes the point made by Mr. Pickles, that is, Mr. Pickles saying that it was a personality conflict that caused it. So having learned from Mr. Franks that he believed the reason for her firing was that she was not a competent reporter, or at any rate not up to his standards as a reporter, I read fairly extensively and satisfied myself that she was highly competent. And it was this that led me to believe that the determining factor then was the pressure from churchmen.
In a summary of his findings to the RNA, Dr. Rivers said, quote, "All the foregoing leads to a conclusion that I consider inevitable when I try to answer two questions. Number one, even if we grant Mr. Pickles' point that there was a personality conflict between Mrs. Law and Mr. Franks, would Mrs. Law have been dismissed had she not excited the animosity of powerful church figures?" Rivers states, quote, "I cannot believe it." Number two, even if we grant Mr. Franks' point that Mrs. Law's writing was not up to his standards, would she have been dismissed if she had been reporting, say, fine arts, and thus not excited the animosity of powerful church figures? Rivers again states, quote, "I cannot believe it." A final question. Was pressure from powerful church figures the determining factor? Dr. Rivers concludes, quote, "I am sure of it."
I've never investigated a case like this, nor do I recall any particular case of this sort. I would say, though, that not only the Catholic Church, not only the Presbyterian Church, not only the Episcopal Church, but any institution will attempt to present itself as favorably as it can. This is understandable. And that's the reason for report there being a necessity for reporters to be aggressive, for reporters to be challenging reporters, not simply to accept what this spokesman, whether he be Catholic, Canadian, Presbyterian, Baptist, or whatever, has to say is a view of the truth. Because those of us who work for institutions find it impossible, I think, to present anything like an objective picture of that institution. I, for example, if I were asked about Stanford University, or if I information for it, information to a reporter about Stanford University, it seems maybe the reporter would not be doing his full duty if he relied only upon the information I provided. He has to root out and dig out the facts that attempt to present the whole truth. I don't ever get the whole truth about anything, but we can come pretty close. I think that reporters of the kind that Janice Law appears to me to be are a necessity for this kind of report.
That was Dr. William Rivers, author of a special report to the Religion News Writers Association of America on the firing of Janice Law by the Houston Chronicle. Perhaps the strongest indictment of the Houston Chronicle and its management practices was contained in an article in the August 1966 issue of the Atlantic Monthly. Titled Houston's Shackled Press, the article states, quote, "Over the years, among the most insistent alarmists of the internal threat to freedom has been the Houston Chronicle, the largest paper in Texas, and at one time the property of Jesse Jones. But so far this decade, the greatest contribution the Houston Chronicle has made to the maintenance of Native American institutions is to conduct a continuing and depressing demonstration of how not to operate a free paper in a free society, and to remind its brethren in the trade that the most immediate threat to a free press in this country is their own conflict of interest." For Pacifica Radio in Houston, I'm Scoop Sweeney.